Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vrstaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pratarane. Nirvase Sisanivadi Paskachade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Bitamscha Vanchakalpa Jubhishta Kipasam Bhivatap Dijanam Pavaneva Vaishnavam Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So today's April 26, 2017 in New Vrindavan, West Virginia. This is the appearance day of Gadadhar Pandit. And we're going to be reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila, Chapter 7, Lord Chaitanya meets Vallabhapata, text 144 to 169. So we have a number of people here who are Bengali or speak fluent Bengali, so I'm sure you will suffer when I say this verse, but sorry about that. Gadhadhar Panditer Shuddha Gada Bhava Rukmini Devira Yaiche Dakshina Swabhava Is that passable? Okay, please chant. Gadadhara Panditera. Of Gadadha Pandit. Shuddha. Pure. Gadha. Deep. Bhava. Ecstatic love. Rukmini Devira. Of Rukmini Devi. Jaiche. As. Dakshina Swabhava. Submissive nature. Translation. Gadadhara Pandit's pure ecstatic love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also very deep. The reason it's also is it's being going back to the verse right before it about Jagannanda Pandit. It was like that of Rukmini Devi, who was always especially submissive to Krishna. So of course that's very interesting because Gadadhara Pandit is said to be a manifestation of Srimati Radharani, who has Vamya Bhav. She has a contrary nature, but in this particular manifestation, she has a submissive nature, which has compared her to Rukmini. Why not to a submissive gopi? Why to a submissive queen? Any thoughts? Why is Jagannanda Pandit compared to Satyabhama and Gadadhar Pandit to Rukmini? Why are they being compared to Dwarka queens instead of Vrindavan gopis? Because they're in Jagannanda Puri, yes. So they're having that. In fact, when Jagannanda Pandit goes to Vrindavan, what does Mahaprabhu tell him? He says, don't associate too closely with the residents of Vrindavan. He says you won't understand. They have a different mood, an intimate mood. And here we see this in text 145 about Gadadhar Pandit also. The reason given for his submissiveness is as follows. I'm just going to read the translation. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes desired to see Gadadhar Pandit's affectionate anger, but because of his knowledge of the Lord's opulences, his anger was never invoked. So here we have, there's some reverence concerning the Lord's opulences. If you look at the Bengali, it's Aishvarya Gyane. So Gadadhar Pandit was aware of the Lord's opulences. So that's not the case with the submissive gopis in Vrindavan. They're not submissive because they are aware of the Lord's opulences.
It's a different kind of submission. So the sort of submission because you're aware that you're dealing with God and you don't want to offend him is a mood that you're going to find in Mathura and Dwarka, of course, in Vaikuntha and Ayodhya, but not in Vrindavan. The Vrindavan mood, whether someone has a contrary mood or someone has a submissive mood, neither is based on an absorption in the Lord's opulences. There are simply different moods because we're all different. I mean, even in this world, we're all different, yes? And no two people are alike. Even identical twins are not alike. Our bodies are different. We have different fingerprints, different retinas in the back of our eyes, different DNA. I mean, such detail of the very temporary body is radically different. Our minds are different than each other, and of course we, the living entity, is different. So in this world, we have these differences in order to try to taste different kinds of perverted material rasas. Because each difference gives you a little different taste. Does that make sense to everybody? Because we are different, what we experience as being pleasant or unpleasant is also different. So one person loves broccoli and one person hates broccoli. One person loves purple and another person hates purple. But this is due, in material life, this is due to superficial material differences that are temporary and changing. And the jiva is trying to go through all these different species of life to try, well, let's see, what would it be like if I enjoyed eating this kind, you know, if I enjoyed eating flesh and blood, what would that be like? If I enjoyed eating grass, what would that be like? And we're trying to experience all different things which require different kinds of bodies. On the spiritual level, these different tastes are there because they're different ways that one wants to satisfy Krishna. So this is the difference between kama and prema. Kama is, how can I satisfy myself? And the reason we keep changing and we have all these differences materially is that any way of trying to satisfy myself separate from Krishna is not satisfying. So therefore, you know, I try one way. Okay, that's not satisfying. Let me try another way. This is the general way we work in this world. You know, I don't like it in Vrindavan. Maybe I'll move to Gita Nagari and then I'll be happy. You understand? Yeah, it's like that. Oh, I'm a lawyer. I don't like being a lawyer. Maybe if I was an artist. Maybe if I was a musician. Maybe if I tried this, I tried that. Try the other thing. Try this one. Then we're, and it goes to the full extent of trying on different bodies. I mean, of course, even in this life, people may dye their hair a different color or get plastic surgery or something like that to try to change their physical body. But from one life to another, we are changing different bodies and trying to enjoy different things. Unfortunately, none of the different things we try are actually different. They're just a mixture of the modes of material nature. They're just goodness, passion, and ignorance. And it's really the same thing, just dressed up differently. So I like to give the example, when I was in China, they made a lot of preparations from a very glutinous rice called sticky rice. And, you know, generally we like to cook rice so that each grain is separate. The Goswamis write about how the gopis bring rice in the middle of the day to the Vrindavan forest, and each grain is separate. It looks like that each grain is the enemy of the other grain. But in China, they like this rice. Of course, many different kinds of rice is used, other places too. But they particularly like the sticky rice, where you cook it and then you can mold it into different things. So they mold it into different shapes and they put different things in it so it looks different. But the taste is always the same. You know, so they're serving something and you think, oh, this looks like halva with raisins. And it's sticky rice with kidney beans. You know, when you think, oh, this is samosas, and it's sticky rice, and, you know, on and on like this. I always kept, oh, this is cake. Oh, no, it's just sticky rice. And the sticky rice has no taste. It has no taste. So it looks like it's this, and it's that, and it's the other thing. But it's all the same thing. Right? What does Prahlad Maharaj say? Chewing the chew. You're just simply trying the same thing over and over and over. If I make it dress like this and put it in this pot. So these material varieties are not ultimately varieties. This is a world of names only. It's the same thing, just looking differently for a moment in eternal time. But spiritually, these varieties are actually varieties. And why is that? Because they're in relation to the Absolute Truth, as Krishna explains in the Chaturslok of the Bhagavatam. Whatever is not, is seen to be a value, but without relation to me, that has no reality. It is my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. But as soon as our individuality is in relationship to the Absolute Truth, then that individuality is also eternal, and it is also real. So there's an infinite variety of loving relationships with Krishna, both in sweetness and in opulence. So it's not that the varieties only exist between sweetness and opulence. There are unlimited varieties of sweetness and unlimited varieties of opulence. But this particular behavior of Gadadhar Pandit in Jagannath Puri is explained here by Krishna Das Kaviraj to be a manifestation of his knowledge of the Lord's opulence. So we're going to read Prabhupada's purport to this verse, which is 145. Prabhupada writes, joking with Rukmini Devi in Dwarka, Krishna once advised her to accept another husband because he was unfit for her. Of course, that's very common in 2017, but it wasn't quite so common 5,000 years ago. Rukmini Devi, however, unable to understand his joking words, took them very seriously and immediately fell to the ground in fear of separation from him. In the pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagannanda Pandit was always in disagreement with the Lord like Satyabhama, whereas Gadadhar Pandit was always awed by the Lord's opulence and was therefore submissive to the Lord under all circumstances. So again, we shouldn't think this being always in disagreement with the Lord by Jagannanda Pandit is something mundane. In the material world, if I'm always in disagreement with you, you probably don't want to be with me and I don't want to be with you. Yes? Who wants to be around someone who's always, Prabhupada uses the word always, in disagreement? But it's simply another flavor of love. So Krishna enjoys all flavor, Akila Rasamrita Murti. And Mahaprabhu also, he enjoys all flavors. So Jagannanda Pandit's relationship, like Satyabhama, like Srimati Radha, their mood is more spicy. You know, some people like things that are very spicy. If you don't put chilies in it, they say it has no taste. So there's this spicy relationship, and then there's the mellow. So the mellow relationship, we find that in Rukmini, in Gadadhar Pandit, in Chandravani, and so forth. So this is the variety of their relationship. Going on to one text, and Prabhupada's giving this example with Rukmini in Dwarka, that when Krishna said, you know, go find another husband, she didn't argue. She didn't give some rejoinder. She just fainted. And it was only when Krishna said to her, I wanted you to argue with me. Oh, okay. Okay, if that will please you, I'll defeat you. And Rukmini then went on to defeat Lord Sri Krishna, Dwarkadish. Okay, I'm going on to text. We're going to go through text 169. So I'm not going to announce the numbers of each verse. For this purpose, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes showed his apparent anger. Hearing of this anger inspired great fear in the heart of Gadadhar Pandit. So the Lord wanted to have some also different dealings even within a particular mood. There is variety. So it's not that Rukmini or Gadadhar Pandit, they're always exactly, Radharani is always exactly like. Just like in the science of rasa, so Srila Rupa Goswami talks about the sthai-bhav, the basic feeling with Krishna, and then the anubhavs, the different emotions that go through. So someone who's normally very quiet, they may become sometimes argumentative, and sometimes who's normally very argumentative may also become submissive sometimes, yes? And so we find that just like Krishna would sometimes try to agitate Rukmini, so Mahaprabhu is sometimes trying to agitate Gadadhar Pandit. And this is to see a different mood, but also it brings out the sweetness of the basic mood, if that makes sense for everybody. Because the Lord is enjoying this basic mood of either argumentativeness or submissiveness, and you see it more when it's challenged. Isn't this true with everybody? You see somebody's real character more when it's challenged. And so if you really like somebody's real character and you want it to surface and show its real beauty, you put it in a situation where it's challenged. So the Lord does this with his devotee. He challenges them, and when he challenges them, they and he more relish their basic nature. And sometimes some other transitory emotion and nature also surfaces. But whenever Mahaprabhu was upset with Gadadhar Pandit, he would just become afraid and withdrawn rather than argumentative. Previously, in Krishna Lila, going on with the translations, when Lord Krishna joked with Rukmini Devi, she took his words seriously and fear awoke within her mind. We should also mention about this fear, that fear is the main component of our material life. Everything we do is saturated with fear. Why is that? Anicca asuka. It's because everything here, not only is it miserable, it's also temporary. So even if you think you're going to make a negotiation with the misery, well, it's miserable, but there's some good in it. And I can see, somehow I'll try to enjoy the thing that's miserable for now. Isn't that what generally materialistic people do? They say, well, there's kind of good and bad, and I'll just, you know, enjoy the moment while you have it, and whatever it is, just get whatever pleasure there is in it. But it's also anicca, it's temporary. Dukalayam shashvatam. Not only is it miserable, the miserable enjoyment doesn't even last. So therefore there's always fear. There's always fear that what I have, I'm going to lose. And I don't have time to play the whole game. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj demonstrated a wonderful game in this, which I like to play. Well, you think about, you know, all the things we wanted in this world that we never got at all. You know, just never got. Maybe you never got your dream job, or you never got your dream spouse, or you never got a child, or you never had your own house or something. You know, what did you never have? And for me, there's this huge football stadium full of unfulfilled material desires. And then of all the things that we wanted and we got, many of them disappoint us, isn't it? Yes? You know, you build up expectation. When I get there, when I get to Disneyland, it's going to be like this, and it's going to be like this, it's going to be like this. And you get there, and your kid is sick the whole time, and it's just raining, and you're in long lines, and there's no happiness at all. Right? Right? You order something, and you get it, and you're like, yes! I got it! And you use it, and you're like, right? Or one devotee sent me a joke that I posted yesterday where this guy's getting on the case of his wife and he's saying, why are you always leaving a cup of water out? She said, because I drink it. He said, well, why don't you put it in the dishwasher when you finish? He says, I'm never finished. And she said, look, why don't you just take this as one of the minor annoyances that you have to tolerate for the sake of your love for me? And he says, but it's a very long list. Said, you don't know how long the list is, you know, so you might think, this is my dream person, and you live with them. And I was recently staying with a family where, you know, the guy threw his dirty socks on the floor, and the wife was saying, can you please not throw your dirty socks on the floor? So you get something, and it doesn't meet your expectations. Or you get something, and it's perfect. I always like to use the example of a Toyota van we had. It was, and I don't work for Toyota or anything, but it was just perfect. Everything about it, I loved it. The seats would go down flat, and there were screens for mosquitoes in the windows, and plenty of room for luggage, and it would turn on a dime. It got great gas mileage. It could fit like 10 people in it. Loved that van. And one day, some guy who was late to work, he ran a stop sign, and he smashed our van. So we're always in fear. I'm afraid that what I want, I may not get. I may not get it. I may not get it. Will I get it? Will I get it? Will I get it? And then we're in fear, will it be good? Will it be good? Will it be good? Will it be good? Will I like it? Will I like it? And then we're in fear, will I lose it? Will I lose it? Will I lose it? And actually, the better the thing is, the more fear we have, isn't it? When you get the thing that's perfect, perfect, you got the perfect house, the perfect car, the perfect spouse, the perfect whatever. I know a devotee who only had one child. I said, why? She said, well, I wanted six, but my first child was so perfect. That's what she told me. She said, I was afraid if I had any more, I would be disappointed. we can stop at one, that's perfect. So my point is, our enjoyment is filled with fear. Filled with fear. Will I get it? Will it be good? Or, and we know we're going to lose it. That's absolutely guaranteed. Whatever we have, we're going to lose it. It will leave us, or we will leave it. Right? Eventually. So we're always filled with fear. And we don't know when it's going to be, right? And then we've always got death sitting over our head like the sword of Damocles. So always fear. And this fear is like a sand in our sweet rice. Most mornings here we serve sweet rice. But imagine if there was sand in it. If you're trying to like pick out the rice and wash it off from the sand, you know, like Raghunatha's father was washing his rice. But then it wouldn't be very tasty anymore. So we think fear must be terrible. But here it said that Gadadhar Pandi Rukmini Devi, when the Lord would get angry with them, they would feel fear. And we think, well, that's awful. Why would I want to be in the Leela if I'm just going to be afraid? I thought that I'm going to have just peace. The opposite of fear is peace. And in fact, Krishna says there can't be any happiness without peace. So how is it that we're reading these stories about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar Pandi, Krishna and Rukmini, and there's fear? Well, that's because fear can also be pleasurable. If it's play fear, just like people go on amusement rides. When I was a kid, I used to like to ride the roller coasters in Palisades Park. Yeah? Well, why do you want to ride the roller coaster? Or why do people want to see scary movies? That's not my thing. I never like scary movies. But why do people want to see a scary movie? There's some pleasure. Right? You know, they're watching a movie, they're reading a book, and the hero is like, the hero's tied up or something, and the clock's ticking. Oh no, the world's going to blow up. Oh, the world's going to blow up, and they're sweating, and their heart's pounding. Oh, he saved the day. They're paying their money to be scared. Yes, am I correct? Are people doing this? But you notice it's a safe fear. First of all, you know that Superman's not going to die, because otherwise they won't be able to make another movie in the franchise. So you know he's not going to die, and you know the world's not going to blow up. I don't know, maybe nowadays they make movies where the world blows up. You know the world's not going to blow up. You know the hero's going to live, and the hero's going to save the day. You know it's going to be okay. And you figure on the roller coaster, they've strapped you in, it's all safe, it's checked out by the government. You know, you're not really going to get hurt. So it's a play fear. And so the fear in the Lord's Leela is like that. The soul never dies, the soul can't get hurt. The relationship with Krishna is eternal. There's no question of the relationship between Krishna and Rukmini or Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar ever breaking. That's impossible. It's a sthayibhava. It's eternal. And the soul is eternal. So the fear becomes enjoyable when you know that it's not, that nothing's actually going to happen. You follow? Everybody understand? So we have a little imitation of that in this world with entertainment and so forth. But the reality is there, where really there's no harm, there's no danger whatsoever, but there's this apprehension. Oh, it becomes excitement. And there's so many leelas of the Lord that involve this rasa of fear. Okay, going on to text 148. Balabhadra was accustomed to worshipping the Lord as child Krishna. Therefore, he had been initiated into Bala Gopala mantra and was thus worshipping the Lord. In the association of Gadadhar Pandit, his mind was converted, and he dedicated his mind to worshipping Kishore Gopala Krishna as a young boy. Balabhadra wanted to be initiated by Gadadhar Pandit, but Gadadhar Pandit refused, saying, "The work of acting as a spiritual master is not possible for me. I am completely dependent. My Lord is Gaura Chandra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I cannot do anything independently without his order." This should be the general principle for devotees, that whatever we do, either order or blessings. So order if it's coming from above, and blessings if it's coming from us. By the way, it's not necessarily better if it's coming from above. we can also initiate desires for service. If you're running a company, you want not only your employees to follow the instructions of their superiors, but you might also want your employees to come up with their own ideas about how the company could be improved. So if the devotee may go to Krishna or to Guru or their superiors and say, oh, I'd like to do this service. Or the superiors may say, I would like you to do this service. But in either way, there always has to be either an order or blessings. The devotee is not going to do something just whimsically. My dear Balabhata, your coming to me is not appreciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he sometimes speaks to chastise me. So Gadadhar Pandit said, really, Lord Chaitanya doesn't like your seeing me at all. What to speak of my initiating you and making you a disciple? He doesn't even want you to see me. Some days passed, and when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finally pleased with Balabhata, accepted his invitation, the Lord sends from Damodar Jagannanda Pandit and Govinda to call for Gadadhar Pandit. On the way, Swarup Damodar said to Gadadhar Pandit, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to test you, therefore he neglected you. Why did you not retaliate by reproaching him? Why did you fearfully tolerate his criticism? Gadadhar Pandit said, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is completely independent. He is a topmost omniscient personality. It would not look well for me to talk to him as if I were his equal. Now, the mood, again, of the submissive devotees in Vrindavan is not, I'm submissive because Krishna is God. They're just thinking, I'm submissive because Krishna is the prince of Raja. He's the son of Nandamarj. He's a very respectable personality, and therefore I don't want to do anything that would disrespect him. So the submissive mood of Vrindavan is on a different basis. Going on, I can tolerate whatever he says, bearing it upon my head. He will automatically be merciful to me after considering my faults and attributes. So this is a very important point, that the devotee will feel if the Lord wants to chastise me, and of course we have the Shikshastika, which is spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's in the mood of Radha, that if you want to do something wonderful for me, or if you want to chastise me, I always love you. So this is also the mood being expressed here. If you want to rebuke me, if you want to correct me, if you want to be angry with me, I will accept that. And I know that ultimately you will be merciful to me. You'll think about things and you'll be merciful to me. After saying this, Gadadhar Pandit went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and fell down crying at the lotus feet of the Lord. Smiling slightly, the Lord embraced him and spoke sweet words so that others would also hear. I wanted to agitate you, the Lord said, but you did not become agitated. Indeed, you could not say anything in anger. Instead, you tolerated everything. Your mind was not disturbed by my tricks. Rather, you stayed fixed in your simplicity. In this way, you have purchased me. So this is a very similar thing that Krishna said to Rukmini in Dwarka. You've purchased me by your submission. So as we said earlier, this is a case where the beautiful quality of a devotee is brought out by putting them into a situation which would shake that heart. If someone's very forgiving and you put them in a situation where they have a reason to forgive, then that forgiveness becomes manifested and blossoms. Everybody understands this. Yes? So Mahaprabhu says, I put you in a situation that would normally anger and agitate someone, but you didn't become agitated. And I'm purchased by the particular flavor of love you have for me. Text 163. No one can describe the characteristics and ecstatic love of Gadadhar Pandit. Therefore, another name for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Gadadhar Prananat, the life and soul of Gadadhar Pandit. No one can say how merciful the Lord is to Gadadhar Pandit, but people know the Lord as Gadadhar Goranga, Lord Goranga of Gadadhar Pandit. No one can understand the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are like the Ganges, for hundreds and thousands of branches flow from even one of his activities. So that's a very deep statement. It reminds us of the description of Krishna as being clever, that with one action, so many different things are accomplished. So from one of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, one can go on thinking about it and talking about it and explaining it and meditating on it for a very, very long time. Just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was challenged, how can you produce a newspaper every day about transcendence? You know, and he said, so many mundane newspapers are being produced every day. He said, the spiritual world is much larger than the material world. We could be producing one every moment. We could be producing a newspaper every second. But even one pastime, and we're going through this quickly today, but we could be talking about this one pastime forever. And going into the many different permutations and meanings of it, as Prabhupada said, we should examine each of the verses from many different angles of vision and discuss it threadbare. Gadadhara Pandit is celebrated all over the world for his gentle behavior, his brahminical attributes, and his steady love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord purified Balabhadra by cleansing him of the mud of false pride. By such activities, the Lord also instructed others. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually always merciful within his heart, but he was sometimes externally neglectful of his devotees. We should not be preoccupied with his external feature, however, for if we do so, we shall be vanquished. The pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are very deep. Who can understand them? Only one who has firm, deep devotion to his lotus feet can understand these pastimes. So sometimes we may also be obsessed with the external dealings the Lord has with us. Being here in Srila Prabhupada's movement means that, I mean, if we're actually here, being here doesn't just mean that we have changed the physical location of our material body. But if we're actually participating in Srila Prabhupada's movement, then we are also participating in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes? Is that correct? And so we're being dealt with by the Lord. We shouldn't think just that what's happening to us in this world is the result of our previous karma. And yes, Vindu Gopa Matavendra Mahaswa Karma, Bandhanu Kapala Vajana Matanuti, Karmadi Nirdhadi Kintu Chabakti Maja. And Lord Nisingadev says that anyone who comes to him immediately becomes his ward. And Lord Ramachandra says this in regard to the surrender of Vibhishan, when he's talking to some of the monkeys, etc., and even Lakshman, who was hesitant to accept Vibhishan. He says, anyone who one time surrenders to me and asks me for courage, at that time I give that person courage. They come under my shelter. So one time, Yamaraj tells the Yamadutas, if somebody one time offers obeisances, one time says, my dear Lord, I am yours. I can't be mechanical, can't you? Okay, my dear Lord, now I'm yours. I stick my head on the ground. Okay, I'm saved. Now, there's a lot of religions that teach this kind of thing, right? You just say something. Allah is the Supreme Lord and Muhammad is his prophet. Okay, you're Muslim. So I don't think it quite works like that. But the idea is that in sincerity, when you actually surrender to the Lord, then the Lord is taking care of you personally. So what is happening to us in our life is under the personal direction of the Lord. Whether he may choose to do something that would ordinarily be our karma is up to him. But it's under his personal direction. And we are told here by Krishna Das Kaviraj that it may appear that he is negligent of his devotees. He may appear to be negligent or he may appear to be angry. And if this happens, my dear friends, with Gadadhar Pandit, then who are we to say it's not going to happen with us? There's one lecture where Prabhupada talks about how, you know, the Pandavas went through so many difficulties and so forth. And then he made this point. You know, we said, we're not on that level. We never would be on the level of Gadadhar Pandit. So why would we think, oh, you know, if I surrender to Krishna, then my life is going to be paved with gold? That's not real surrender anyway. That's a contractual business agreement. And most people take to, I think we can safely say, most people take to religious life with some idea like this in mind. I mean, I haven't done a study, so I don't know if I can say this authoritatively. But, you know, God give me this, God give me this, Prabhupada liked to say about the women in Germany during World War II. Please save my husband or my son or my brother or my father. And when the men died, the women became atheists. And we see this phenomena also among the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I mean, I've seen this among devotees. I had a great life. I mean, this is a true story of someone I know. Well, I had a great life. We were fantastically wealthy. We had a wonderful marriage. Everything was amazing. And then it all finished. Our business collapsed. My husband left me. Everything collapsed. And I was communicating with this devotee recently, how are you doing? And she said, well, I'm not sure how my faith is doing. Well, why have I had all the, why have I gone through all these experiences? Why did I lose, you know, my money, my home, my family, everything? Why did I lose all, how can, what's the point of worshiping Krishna? What's so people think like this. There's a tendency, yes? Maybe some of us struggle with this sometimes. You know, when things go really badly, especially when they go badly from the other devotees, I think. You know, especially then. But I thought the devotees were all supposed to be nice. I know. Try to talk about this story a little bit because that really brings it out. These verses are a summary of the story. But if we see this as Krishna dealing with me, it's explained that Maharaj Parikit, he saw like that. When Maharaj Parikit put the dead snake around Shamakarishi's neck and then the boy cursed the king, you'll die in 7 days from a snake bird, I guess it's like a dragon. You know, what he did, Maharaj Parikit, he said, this curse is the form of God. God has taken the form of this curse. Krishna has come to me in this form. And everything Krishna does is good. In the purport to 1515 Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, God is all good, God is all merciful. You know, I generally think God is good when he does things that are in accord with my material comfort. Yes? And when he does things that are not in accord with my material comfort, I think that he's bad. But this is a very narrow way of seeing it. And if we can see that it's Krishna behind the wonderful miracles in our life, Prabhupada explains, then we should also see that Krishna's behind the difficult things in our life. Don't we all have some time when there's something that we want and Krishna just magically supplies it through somebody? Isn't it? I mean, I like to tell the story of Asari that I was once looking in my closet many years ago and I thought, God, I only have like 3 silk saris. Now I think I only have 1. And I thought, I could use another one for festivals. And I thought, well, it should be like a really thick fabric and beige with embroidery. And I had like a picture of it in my head. I thought, maybe next time I go to India, I'll buy it. And then I thought, it'll be at least $40. You can understand how long ago this was. You know, I don't think I'm going to forget it. I don't really need it. So it was the 22nd thought, like that. And 3 days later, when one of the devotees was picking up her daughter from the Gurukula, she says, Ramila, I have something for you. And you know what it was? It was that sari. And it was that sari exactly, that was my mental picture. Exactly, you know. And I just started crying. I said, Krishna, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to ask you for a piece of cloth. But we could see that's Krishna. And it's funny, this just happened to me again a few days ago. So I had a little bottle of essential oil that I use, and it has a roller top. So it doesn't like, the oil doesn't like spill out. You know, you can just roll it on. But if you push it too hard, it can break the thing that holds the ball. The ball falls out. So that's what happened, and the ball fell out. I'm like, oh my. Ball in there, and now if I don't handle it really carefully, it can spill. And I'm like, I don't have an extra rollerball thing. Oh well. So a few days later, Malati invites me over to give me some cinnamon essential oil that the ants don't like. It acts like Lakshman's circle around Sita. And you put this cinnamon oil around, the ants go up to it and go, no way am I crossing that line. So she said, I'll give you some, but she said, let me put a top on that will, so it won't spill so much. So she took out a rollerball top. How many people have rollerball tops for essential oils? Is that like something people have sitting around their houses? She takes one out and she says, let me pop the ball out, and then you'll have a little hole. I said, well, actually, I have one in my house with the ball already popped out. Just give me that one and I'll switch it. And I went back and I'm like, can't believe Krishna gave me a rollerball top for my essential oil. How would he do that? You know, I mean, how many people have that in their house and would offer you one? Here's a rollerball top. Yeah. So then we see it's Krishna's my point of these stories. Yes, everybody has these experiences. Yeah. I remember once years ago, I was thinking I'd really like some cashews. And then there was a bag of cashews on my door. And then we see it's Krishna. But when it's the other thing, we may not see it's Krishna. Of course, one of my good friends, she was a head pujari for many, many years. And she was a temple president for a while. Anyway, I can't remember if it was when she was head pujari or when she was temple president. But her life got a little overwhelming. And so she was standing in front of the deities. And she said, please, Radhakalokananda, please, I need a break. I just can't take it anymore. I need a break. So if you've ever been to Hillsborough, North Carolina, the temple's up on stairs. So she walked out of the temple and she fell down the stairs. And she got a break. One break in her ankle and one break in her pelvis. And so she was lying in bed for 6 weeks. And she said, well, I got a lot of time to hear and chant. But she was just laughing. She said, Krishna, I didn't mean that kind of a break. So sometimes in the difficulties we can see that there's Krishna's hand. But sometimes we can't. You know, sometimes we just think, you know, if you really love me, why did my business fail? And Prabhupada said he felt like that when his business failed, that he was saying to Krishna. And Prabhupada said this himself, have I made some mistake that you've done this to me? So then I understood, oh, it was mercy. It was mercy. So if we don't want this kind of relationship with the Lord, we really should just go to the Brahmajyoti. Because then there's not this sort of reciprocation and there's not this sort of individuality. But we should remember that if we take it the right way, this kind of reciprocation, individuality, is all rasa. It's all relishable. The so-called good and the so-called bad. In this world, the so-called good and the so-called bad is actually all bad. It's all just sticky rice. It's all bad. And in the spiritual, the so-called good and the so-called bad is all good. So I want to just briefly, very, very briefly, because it's getting late, go through what is the story that's the background of these verses. So Balabhadra had written a commentary on the Bhagavatam, and he wanted to recite it to Mahaprabhu. And usually Swarupadamodara act as the police officer, and he wouldn't let people in if what they had written wasn't proper. But somehow Balabhadra got past the guard, and he started reciting his commentary, and he said, my commentary is better than Sridhar Swami. And Mahaprabhu said, the woman who doesn't follow her Swami is a prostitute. So he says, you're not, this isn't proper, I don't want to hear it. And Balabhadra was very hurt. Most of us feel hurt if we feel that our ego is not properly acknowledged. I was just reading this morning with the Daksha Yajna. That is that Prabhupada wrote that Lord Shiva is anger personified, and he decided that he wanted to respond to Daksha's insulting him. I mean, it was a pretty heavy insult that your wife commits suicide. But this tendency that my ego has been offended by your insult, and therefore I'm going to become angry. It's one of the main reasons, by the way, that we become angry. So Balabhadra became angry. I was criticized in front of all the devotees. Me, the great scholar who has written a commentary on the Bhagavatam, I should have been honored by God himself, and I wasn't. So he tried to get all the devotees to hear his commentary. And their mood was, if Mahaprabhu is not going to hear it, we're not going to hear it. But what Balabhadra did is he just went into Gadadhar Pandit's house. I guess the door, maybe he didn't have a lock on his door or something. Or maybe he didn't have a door, I don't know, but he just went in. And Balabhadra was a senior person and a scholar, and Gadadhar Pandit was very mild and general. And, you know, someone's in your house, you're not usually going to throw them out. You understand? It's different to keep somebody from coming in and to throw them out. It's a little different. Does that make sense to everybody? Like there was this recent thing on an airplane. You know, on the airplanes, they often book too many seats. And so usually before you get on the plane, they say, okay, we don't have enough seats, we'll pay you. One time when my family was traveling, we agreed to that twice in a row, and we got $8,000 in travel vouchers. Oh, my God. So usually before you get on the plane, they say, you know, but this time they waited till the people were sitting on the plane. And they said, okay, some of you have to leave. And nobody wanted to leave. And they said, okay, we're going to pull names out of a hat. And they pulled the name out of a hat. And the guy said, I don't want to leave. So they called the police to drag him off the plane. And everybody rightfully said, that wasn't very nice. So if someone's already in your house, you know, asking them to, what are you going to do? You know, Gadadhar Pandit wasn't willing to, like, pick up Balabhadra and carry him off, carry him out of the house. Or call the police, you know, and listen to him. He just thought, I'm stuck. And it's interesting, Gadadhar Pandit said that he was thinking, well, all the devotees are going to criticize me. They're all going to criticize me. Why are you listening to Balabhadra? Mahaprabhu, and you think you're better than Mahaprabhu, you think you're, you know, they're all going to criticize me. And he thought, but Lord Chaitanya will know. He's in my heart. He's going to know. And it said Balabhadra was very forcefully reciting his commentary. Right? And he was even, as mentioned in these verses, he was even asking Gadadhar Pandit, please initiate me. You know, this way he could kind of get in. And it actually happened that the devotees were very critical of Gadadhar Pandit. It actually happened. And even Lord Chaitanya appeared to be angry with Gadadhar Pandit. So not only were the devotees upset with him, but at least externally the Lord appeared to be upset with him. Eventually, Balabhadra understood and became grateful for Mahaprabhu smashing his ego. Eventually, he accepted it. And that's kind of another topic. I don't really want to put us in the place of Balabhadra for this class, but the idea that we should be grateful when our ego is dismantled, our false ego is dismantled, because that's why we came to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to become conscious of Krishna rather than our ahankara. So when our ahankara is being dismantled, we should rejoice instead of trying to smash whoever interfered with our false ego. How dare you interfere with the very thing I'm trying to destroy that's causing all my misery? Yeah, if we think about that for a moment, you know, we should rather say, thank you so much for smashing the thing I'm trying to get rid of. And not, you know, I'm struggling. I don't know about you guys, but I struggle to get rid of my false ego. Maybe all of you find it very easy. But for me, I don't. I find my false ego is very tenacious. It has like super deep roots that have been there for a billion years. You know, it's one of these grandfather trees that, you know, you could have a car go through it. And the roots are going all the way down to China. So I find it difficult to uproot my false ego. My attempts to do so have been markedly unsuccessful. So when other people smash and bash the roots and the branches of my false ego, I should be very happy, because that's what I'm trying to do. So eventually Balabhadra did become happy. And the other interesting thing to me that I find absolutely fascinating, and our time is out and we won't be able to talk about this for hours, though we certainly could, is that sometimes when you do the right thing, the devotees aren't happy. If we always judge our own rightness and goodness and sense of self by whether or not all the devotees are praising us, we will be very disappointed, unhappy, and eventually bitter people. And I've seen so many members of the Hare Krishna movement think that the injunction that I please Krishna by pleasing the devotees, and that I can tell when Krishna is pleased by the devotees being pleased, means that I judge my self-worth, I judge my identity, I judge my spiritual advancement, wholly and solely, by whether or not everybody else in the Hare Krishna movement thinks that everything I do all the time is wonderful. And you know what, my dear friends? That will not happen. It just won't happen. It doesn't happen even to Gadadhar Pandit. It didn't happen to Prabhupada with his godbrothers. It's not that all of Prabhupada's godbrothers said, oh, everything you're doing in the West is wonderful. Some of them appreciated it, but Prabhupada said, what did I get? He said, I got compression, repression, and depression. You don't always get appreciation from the other devotees for whatever reason. And I see the ultimate reason is so we can remember that I'm not trying to please the devotees independently of trying to please the Lord. I'm trying to please the devotees to please the Lord, not to please the devotees separate from the Lord. That may sound like it's the same thing, but it isn't. It's radically different. It's radically different. I was visiting a family the other day where they've been married about a year, and the woman said to me as I was leaving, "So do you think I'm being a good wife?" And I said, "Yeah, I think you're being a good wife. But you shouldn't be trying to be a good wife. You should be trying to please Krishna." So if you're just trying to please your husband, you know, your husband's not always going to be pleased with you. No matter how hard you try to please him. We experience this. You know, I do everything to try to please someone or some group of people, and they're not pleased. And sometimes we're like that with others, right? Have you ever been displeased by somebody's attempts to please you? I have. Sometimes the more they try to please me, the more displeased I am. It's like, stop trying so hard. You know, there's a place I go to in the world where they don't get very many traveling preachers because they want to encourage the local preachers. So they intentionally restrict the number of traveling preachers to 6 per year. And every traveling preacher can only go there a maximum of once every 2 years. So when you are there, they go all out. And every meal they want to serve me, really, really, no exaggeration, 50 preps, and 15 different people cook. And they're all standing around. "Do you like that? Do you like that? Do you like that? Do you want some more of this? Do you want some more of that?" I'm like, I don't need 15 people serving me. Please, wait outside. One person serving me. And then they're disappointed. And it's hard to even taste 50 preps. What to speak of actually eat them. So I don't eat all 50 preps. I just don't. And I don't let them all have the pleasure of being in the room watching me eat their prep. Because you can't even digest. Imagine 15 people standing around you. So I end up getting annoyed. It's hard for me not to get. I mean, I'm really trying. "Thank you so much, but could you wait outside?" And internally, I'm like, leave me alone. Let me just eat in peace. So they're making a super effort to please me, and I'm not pleased. Eh? And sometimes we're making a super effort to please someone, and not pleased. But Krishna can always be pleased. And even though Mahaprabhu was externally angry at Gadadhar Pandi, actually he was very pleased. He was superficially angry because he wanted to set the example that if something's not sanctioned by the Lord, you shouldn't do it, even if you're such a person as Gadadhar Pandi. He didn't want to show people, oh, well, there's an out. If something's not approved by the Lord, then you shouldn't deal with it, no matter how great and powerful or how dear to the Lord we think we are. But he was actually pleased. And of course, eventually all the devotees became pleased with him. So we should definitely sacrifice everything to please the devotees, but not to please the devotees independent of Krishna. To please the devotees so Krishna will be pleased. Krishna, are you pleased with how I'm dealing with my husband? Are you pleased with how I'm dealing with my wife? Are you pleased with how I'm dealing with my child? Who's not ultimately, eternally, my husband, wife, or child anyway. It's really, Krishna, are you pleased with how I'm dealing with this devotee who temporarily in this world has this particular relationship with me, and not to be a good person in this world. And I think this pastime of Gadadhar Pandi is one of the few that we have in the Shastra that really exemplify this extremely, extremely important principle. So it is already 2 minutes after 9. Oh, my watch is 9 o'clock exactly. We're supposed to end at 9. We could take maybe one or two questions. But if you're hungry, go ahead to prasadam and I won't be offended.
It was just, you know, there seemed to be two thoughts in this where, you know, sometimes you would not even that you're friends with someone and then there's a disagreement, but sometimes you don't really, you're just an acquaintance, let's say, and somehow, for whatever reason, the person just doesn't talk to you anymore. So, okay, you know, need space, whatever, it's fine. So some devotees will say, that's okay, we offer respects from a distance, because we're honoring Krishna in the Vaishnava. And other devotees say, well, no, can you at least just say that? Can you at least do this and the other? And sometimes you're ready to do it, and sometimes you're not. So I just wanted to hear what you have to say on that.
Well, again, the basic principle, I mean, you're talking about in detail, but the basic principle is what would please Krishna, what would make Krishna smile. How can I deal with this other living being so that Krishna will be pleased with my dealings with them? And I think to answer that question in each case means looking at my own motive. So I don't see it as just the external behavior. Do I stop physically dealing with this person or not? It really depends on what's my reasons for doing that, more than the thing in and of itself. If I stay away from someone because it's just like, well, this person is not pleasant for my own ego, and I just don't want to be around anybody who's unpleasant for my ego, so I'm going to just accepting, rejecting, I'm just going to avoid them on that basis. You know, I'm going to avoid them because I think that they're unreasonable and terrible and this and that. Then that probably isn't very pleasant to Krishna. If I'm avoiding them because that's their desire, that they want that kind of relationship, and I'm genuinely respecting that, then I think that that's very nice. Or sometimes we just, you know, we're different people. Sometimes we just have different moods and different ways. And, you know, there was that astrologer in Swaganj who said Prabhupada could build a house in which the whole world could live. But most houses that I know have more than one room. Now, it's not that because we all live in the same house, we're all going to sleep in the same bed. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, there's different groups. There's different groups of cows, there's different groups of gopis. And they're not, they're all together sometimes. Under Govardhan Hill, they're all together. When Krishna's in Kaliya, they're all together. I mean, there's sometimes when everybody is together. But generally, that's not the case. You know, and even like when Krishna's dancing with the gopis, Mother Yasoda and Mother Rohini are not there. There's different moods, and the moods are not all compatible. So if it's like that, you know, or sometimes, I mean, sometimes also we have to discriminate and say, this person is an aparadi. They're a Vaishnava, and they're trying, and they'll get there someday, but right now I'm not supposed to hear aparadi. So it depends on what your reason is. And that requires not only introspection with the mind, but it also requires an openness to the Lord and saying, please, Krishna, you show me if this behavior of mine is pleasing or not. And I found sometimes that maybe this week or this month or this year, it's appropriate to keep my distance from someone, and another time it may not. I've had people that where there was a distance, and later on we became close friends. And these things also shift. But the main thing is, what is our reason? That's actually much more important than exactly, you know, you can't give people a formula. Well, if someone behaves like this, do this. If someone behaves like this, do this. It's not like that at all. Not like that at all. Is my motive to please Krishna, or is my motive satisfaction of my senses and my ego? And if I want to know what would be most pleasing to Krishna, I really have to introspect, I really have to pray, I may have to consult with other Vaishnavas and so forth. But that's the overriding principle, is am I dealing with this other being, whether it's the ant on your counter, or, you know, somebody at this shop, or another Vaishnava, or anybody, even objects. You know, we heard that Prabhupada didn't like how he was even moving a typewriter with his foot. So even objects, how would Krishna be pleased? And the same person, it may be different on Monday at 10 o'clock and Monday at 4 o'clock even. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gadadhar Pandit ki jai.
Jai.